Welcome to Well-Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well-Versed Podcast.
Garland Favorito is no stranger to the World Prayer Network call. He's been on numerous times, I don't know how many times. He has analyzed the Georgia cases and the legal issues regarding the election. He's married to Tamara. I had the privilege of performing their wedding. Garland, how long ago was that? A year and a half, 2 years?
It's been, I think, about a year and 9 months right now.
And Tamara used to live in the San Diego area, was part of the church I pastored, and she serves on the board of Well-Versed, our ministry. So she's very, very special to our entire family. And we're so excited she met Garland, and they've been married, as you heard, almost 2 years. Garland is kind of a genius on the whole Georgia election legal issues. But rather than go just to Georgia generically, because we've interviewed about that topic before, we interviewed a chaplain, Chaplain Lee, not too long ago, and he has been indicted in a Georgia legal case along with about 18 others, along with President Trump. Chaplain Lee doesn't even know President Trump, has never met him. Chaplain Lee is a chaplain that specializes in crisis situations like 9/11, hurricanes, tsunamis, tornadoes. Wherever there's a severe crisis, he goes and ministers and helps people through those very, very difficult times. And he's been charged in a Georgia courthouse, Fannie Willis. Well, Garland, tell more about that. But when he was on, I couldn't figure out quite what he was charged, why this chaplain would be charged. He couldn't talk about it, so he didn't. Garland Favorito, our good friend, can talk about it, is allowed to talk about it, and he'll explain what is happening in that Georgia. If Garland, you can talk about the whole case, first of all, I have difficulty understanding what the world is this charge all about, President Trump and 17 or 18 others. And then if we can focus on the chaplain, here he is, a fellow pastor, a fellow Lutheran, he's a Lutheran pastor, has quite a ministry for the last 40, 50 years, and suddenly charged in this. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how he got swept in to that charge. So Garland, we're going to throw it wide open and you help us understand what is going on in Georgia and then the complications with Fannie Willis and her boyfriend, and he's now off the case, and at least as of this moment, she's still on the case. And I hear that there's been a calls to debar her, to take her license away to practice law. So this is a complicated situation. Unravel us and help us understand what is going on in Georgia.
Well, Jim, the reason it's so complicated and you're having trouble understanding is because we all down here are having trouble understanding it. So don't feel bad at all that you're having trouble. We don't get it either, haven't gotten it ever since the beginning. Here at Voter GA, we were the first organization to call for the impeachment of Fannie Willis when she filed this indictment.
What organization did you say?
Voter GA.
Voter, okay.
And when she filed the indictment, we read it. It's a 43-count indictment against 18 of her political adversaries and one independent elections director. And I'll walk you through a little bit about the history as to why we believe that this is the worst case of prosecutorial misconduct in American history. I'm going to wind you back to I guess it was September 15th of 2021. Fannie Willis had been elected district attorney and took office in January of 2021. You remember that was as COVID was there was a backlog of cases there at Fulton County because of COVID. It was starting to wrap up. And she went to the Fulton County Commission on that day and she asked for an additional $5 million a year in her budget so that she could reduce the unindicted murder case backlog in the county of Fulton, which is where I live. and to keep Fulton County safe. And of course, the commissioners granted her the money, because how could you, as a commissioner, not vote against keeping your county safe? She got that money, the additional $5 million per year, beginning in January of 2022. And in January of 2022, she wrote to the chief Fulton County judge to request to open an election investigation. And this is the investigation that she opened back then upon that request, as soon as she had gotten the extra money, which was allegedly to reduce the murder case backlog in Fulton County. So she opened this indictment. It resulted in this weird novel RICO conspiracy.
Did you say what RICO stands for?
Yeah, that's the Racketeering Influencing and Corruption Act. And that is that's usually reserved for mobsters, gangsters, that type of thing. And she decided that she was going to apply this statute against 18 of her political adversaries and one independent elections director. I say that they're her political adversaries because she is a Democrat, and she indicted 18 people who always have connections to the Republican Party or Donald Trump. So it was clearly, beyond any doubt, a politically motivated indictment that she spent millions of dollars of taxpayer money on, which was certainly not, anything that we in Fulton County, the people, wanted to do, but it was for her own personal and her political interests, which is a direct conflict based on multiple statutes and professional conduct rules here in Georgia. So she opened this investigation, and that was the result of it. And it has a lot of bizarre charges in it. And first of all, the reason for RICO is she was able to do a widespread discovery, whereas if you were charging somebody with a crime, you would have a very limited discovery. And discovery meaning you can collect evidence about the case. So this kind of opened the door to go out and connect all kinds of massive evidence for that may or may not even apply to the case. And that's what she has done at taxpayer expense for the last couple of years. So anyway, and there were several questions came up. First of all, the reason that she wrote the letter was because there is really no clear-cut law that says that a district attorney has any jurisdiction over federal election matters to begin with. Now, a lot of her things was she was against, a lot of her charges were against the folks who were organizing the alternate electors here in Georgia. We can talk all about that, but both parties have alternate electors who are established 6 months ahead of time, back in March of 2020 in this case. And there's nothing unusual about that. There's no such thing as a fake elector. These happen all the time. So she ended up claiming that they had come up with this scheme of fake electors, when in reality, the Republicans in Georgia for Donald Trump in 2020 did exactly what the Democrats did in 1960 in Hawaii for John F. Kennedy. Complete precedence for having alternate electors in disputed elections. That was a perfect example when the electors were challenged by the Democrats successfully, and the electors were moved from Richard Nixon to John F. Kennedy. And this is another case goes all the way back to 1876, which is the Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes election, where three states were in dispute there. So there was nothing unusual about that, but she attempted to criminalize something that has case precedence dating back over 140 years. So that was part of the problem with what she did. But the other issue is she had no jurisdiction to do this, and the 12th Amendment of the Constitution, as well as Article 6, said that all power to determine electoral results and resolve disputes is reserved for the United States Congress, not a district attorney. In fact, even in Georgia, state election board has responsibility for all election investigations. No district attorney in the state of Georgia has that type of authority. However, she was able to do this anyway, and so far has been able to get away with this because the judge has not yet ruled her, reeled her in on this, and he's left those issues to be appealed to a Georgia appeals court.
Were those issues brought up in the hearing of a few weeks ago?
Not a few weeks ago, but they were brought up probably a couple of months ago. They were not brought up in the disqualification hearing because that was a little bit different, but they have been brought up to defend some of the attorneys. And the judge has not, in spite of the clear plain text of both federal and state law, the judge has yet to rule in favor of the defendants. That led to this disqualification hearing, which came up, and how she has kind of basically been involved with a her special prosecutor that she had hired. So as a result of getting that money that I talked about earlier, she went out immediately within 6 weeks and hired Nathan Wade as a special prosecutor. And she, according to Georgia law, she was supposed to get approval from the county commission in order to do that. There's no law that authorizes her to do that without approval. And there's only been three cases where this has ever, special prosecutors have been hired by different jurisdictions in Georgia. And those three cases, the other two counties basically hired special prosecutors and paid them roughly less than $2,000 each to handle a very specific part of a case. And by contrast, Fannie Willis has given Nathan Wade $700,000 of taxpayer money, Fulton County taxpayer money, for this bizarre case. And the evidence clearly is starting to clearly show that she was involved in an affair with him while she actually before she had even hired him. And this is the timing of this affair has become a huge issue because it's becoming more and more obvious. In fact, even the judge has said that Nathan Wade lied in his interrogatories to his in his divorce case because they were having an affair while he was still legally married to his wife, which he still is in the process of divorcing. So they and they both tried to claim this affair started after she had hired him. However, a witness named Robert Yerty, who's a friend of hers, has testified that their affair started in 2019. There were massive text messages from Nathan Wade's business partner, Terrence Bradley, that the affair started in 2019. And the cell phone data clearly shows thousands of text messages and thousands of phone calls prior to her hiring him. So all the evidence is showing that both Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade lied under oath, which is just incredible. And this is why the judge has dodged this as best he could in order to keep her on the case, because it clearly it's a huge conflict of interest. And it's even a question of integrity. As you said, Jim, that there's really a question as to whether or not, when this is all over, she'll be able to maintain her bar license. as well as some of the other folks on this Fulton County team. Just to give you one idea more, the Nathan Wade, who had never prosecuted a criminal case, was paid a total of $700,000, I mentioned. The other lead attorney on this case, the actual one who's litigating the case, Anna Cross, who has since left the case because of some problems, and she's realized that some issues in the case, she was paid only less than $100,000 so far, and the hit RICO person, who has not billed for a while either and seems to be distancing himself from the case as well, he was paid less than $100,000. So Nathan Wade was paid seven times more than the absolute top people that Fannie Willis has engaged, the other two special prosecutors has engaged to actually litigate the case. So that's just a little bit of background about how problematic this case really is.
If she has no authority to even make the charges, and she has no authority to even expend the monies this way, or as it would seem, how has she made it this long without somehow some court working its way up and some court pulling the chain on this?
Well, the only court that's been involved here is Judge McAfee's court. Judge McAfee used to work for her and has donated to her campaign. And in addition, when he was the Inspector General of the state of Georgia under—
Okay, right there. He worked for her and he donated to her campaign.
Correct.
Would that not be grounds for recusal?
Yes. And in addition to that, Jim, he also was involved in one of our complaints, not me personally, but one of our people, when he was the Inspector General under Kemp, and he actually covered up a complaint against Brad Ravensburger for providing false information about audits. Yes, so normally that would be grounds for recusal, but the attorneys I've had several attorneys on the case tell me, you know, if we recuse him, we'll just probably end up with somebody even worse because it's Fulton County. So that's how bad this situation is. Do you have a compromised judge versus someone who's even worse? It's a sad state of affairs for the judicial system, not only in Georgia, but throughout America. We've seen this in other cases against Trump.
But so the issue of her not having authority to even do this, has that issue, obviously it surely has come up with the attorneys of some of these 18 people. Does that case have any legs to it to move forward?
Yeah, but those grounds will be grounds for appeal. The defendants have asked for an immediate appeal, which can be granted here in Georgia. The judge did not grant the immediate appeal in that particular case. So they'll have to wait until the trial is over and millions of dollars of Fulton County taxpayer money will be expended, only to find what I will believe is that one or the other of those appeals will be upheld, and they'll find that this whole case was a sham to begin with.
Now, is it the case started, am I correct, when Trump allegedly placed a phone call, or am I mixing up cases, where he said, find me some votes or something like that?
Yeah, he allegedly, that's a whole nother interesting situation. Yes, he allegedly, the case was started when supposedly based on that phone call. Now there's a problem, I think, with this whole call thing, because I believe there was an article that was in the Federalist recently that explained what we have known for some time, and that is that the call was recorded out of Florida by the Assistant Secretary of State at that time, Jordan Fuchs, and she was granted immunity by Fannie Willis's team to testify for the grand jury, even though that is technically a violation of federal law, or at least Florida state law, because Florida is a two-party consent state.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have consent from both parties. And of course, nobody on President Trump's team's consented to that. And really, there was nothing wrong with the call to begin with, which is the whole other thing, because as more and more evidence has come out, the Washington Post has actually had to retract some of the stuff that they had printed. And then that was when they fingered the Assistant Secretary of State for giving them the information that turned out to be false.
Now, folks, we're talking to Garland Favorito, who's a profound expert on the whole Georgia situation regarding the 2020 election, and clearly an expert on what is taking place in this current situation. I know we're kind of deep in the weeds on this, but this is in the news every day, and we as believers need to be, number one, informed. Number two, we need to be informed how to pray. And then number three, we need to be informed where things are being done in violation of the law of the land. We need to push back on those kind of moments. And we have here what is apparently a number of potential violations. So we need to be informed for the sake of integrity, our desires for truth and for integrity to rise up. Let me go back with more questions then. So Wade has been removed from the case. And Fani Willis is left on the case. I guess I don't understand, since she hired him and violated all these laws in the procedure, I understand he's gone, but he's sort of the sacrificial lamb in this. Why isn't she gone? How is it she's the one that violated so many laws to this point anyway? How come she's not gone from this case?
The simple reason is, Jim, in my opinion, is that the judge does not have the courage to do the right thing, because he's up for re-election in November in Fulton County. And if he was to do the right thing, which was disqualified from the case, then she would use her political machine to make sure that he's not re-elected. And therein is, I believe, exactly why he left Fani Willis on the case, in spite of the overwhelming evidence of her conflicts. Let me give you just two more examples real quickly. She went to a church in downtown Atlanta, and she played the race card, trying to claim that the defendants were racist. And she said things which no prosecutor would ever say about an ongoing case. That alone was a severe lack of judgment. But then she turned around and authored this book with a title called Find My Votes, which you were alluding to earlier. And the author said that they had something to the effect of unlimited access to the case files when they wrote the book. That's another incredible lack of judgment. Is just too polite for that. So those are other things that have come out in this case, which would warrant any reasonable judge who's impartial to immediately disqualify her from the case. So it's unreal that she is still there. So she has the personal conflict. She has the financial conflict, the conflict of power. But then on top of all that, she actually threatened criminal prosecution of Nathan Wade's wife for her own personal gain in this case as well. That's a whole nother situation, which is just beyond belief.
I don't want to chase too many. Go down too many rabbit holes here, but that's the new wrinkle. I've not heard that one. So Fani Willis threatened Nathan Wade, her boyfriend's wife or ex-wife, on what charge, kind of a charge would she make against her?
Well, she was trying to claim that Nathan Waite's subpoena of her, she was a subpoena of Fannie Willis, was political. I'm sorry, his wife's subpoena and her investigation was politically motivated to damage Nathan Waite and Fannie Willis, which, of course, based on the attorney's own interview, they had no idea. Nathan Waite's wife had no idea that he was even employed by Fannie Willis. He had hidden. It's now come out that he had hidden money in an IOLTA account, which is a lawyer's trust account, based on what we have seen from Ashley Merchant's Senate testimony. Everything, by the way, I'm telling you is, for the most part, is Senate testimony or from various documents that exist in the cases. So that's kind of a background of this. The other issue is that because they went on all the trips together, you probably heard this. I think Nathan Wade had spent roughly $17,000, and there's no evidence of her paying that money back. So another issue is that she accepted money from a prohibited source, which she can't accept money from or gifts or benefits from a special counsel who she hired and she's involved with. So that's a whole nother issue because she said that she paid him back in cash, but yet there's no records of her withdrawing cash from her accounts enough to pay that back. So she has no evidence, no paper trail that she has actually paid the money back. And that's the standard is only an appearance of conflict. And what the defendants have done is provided six different aspects of actual conflict, not just an appearance of conflict. For all those reasons, she should have been disqualified by the judge. We'll see what the appeals court says about all this to determine whether I'm right or wrong.
We're talking to Garland Favorito, and once again, as I said a moment ago, we've kind of waded deep into the weeds on this one because this case, we wouldn't even be talking about this case were it not that it involved the President of the United States, or a candidate now for President of the United States, Donald Trump. And then what triggered it is we interviewed a chaplain, Chaplain Lee, a few weeks ago, and who's also being charged in this case. And it was not clear to me at all. So he could not discuss why he was charged, but he's facing prison time. He's a pastor and a chaplain who works with emergency services wherever there's tsunamis or tornadoes or floods or like 9/11 kind of events. That's what chaplain we're chaplainly ministers, but he's charged with a crime. We're about to find out why was he charged with this, because this I do not understand. Garland, am I catching you still at a good time to continue?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. That so to answer this first one very quickly, what was President Trump specifically charged with? Say the nature of his charge, and we won't park there at all. I just want to identify that, whether the technical legal term is for his charge. And then I think 18 people total, and then also as well, let's take that first one. Let's be very brief on this one. Can you tell me specifically what he was charged with?
Well, the big charge is RICO, and there were some other charges but that are bizarre. I'll give you an example. He tweeted that, "Hey, why don't y'all go and watch the Senate hearing right now and see the evidence that is being presented?" And she considered that to be an act of a conspiracy or a crime. He tweeted again and says, "Go watch One American News," or something like that. And these are acts of a conspiracy, and she's using these terms to claim that he was involved in this attempt to overthrow the elections, when in reality he was challenging the illegitimacy of the election. The other thing that's very disturbing about this, Jim, is that we have provided for the last 3 years, we have produced much evidence of fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election. Fannie Willis withheld all that information from the grand jury. And in our case, she had to know that we had it because we had two lawsuits against Fulton County, and she's the district attorney of Fulton County. Just because we're in another, she's in another office from the Fulton County attorneys, doesn't mean that she could and would not know anything about it. That's just not credible.
So President Trump was charged with a crime based upon trying to influence the election or something. And then we have Jenna Willis, his attorney. Am I saying the right name?
Yeah, Jenna Ellis, her charge,
Ellis.
Had she just simply stayed with it, her charge would have been dismissed because the only charge against her was a charge that it's a bizarre charge. I think it was, I can't remember if it was false statement, some kind of conspiracy to do something. I'd have to go look up the exact thing for Jenna. But that charge was eventually dismissed for all the defendants within the last 2 weeks. So all this thing about her crying and all that theatrics on television was just pretty much a bunch of nothing. All she had to do was stay the course.
Oh, so now there's 18 charged, and Jenna was one, and a whole bunch of other people, and then this Chaplain Lee.
Yes.
So, what was for the life of me, it baffles my mind how he got caught up in this thing. How was he? Why was he charged?
Well, he had as being a crisis manager, he was involved in trying to get Ruby Freeman some protection so that she could tell the truth, even though he never met Ruby Freeman.
Ruby who?
Ruby Freeman was a lady who was involved in the State Farm Arena video. You may have seen her, and she allegedly had allegedly double scanned some ballots and that type of thing. So Ruby, he was attempting to get her protection so that she could tell the truth because she had already come out with some admissions on social media. Although now they deny that, but there's still
say protection. You mean like security around her?
Well, and protection and attorneys, that type of thing. Both legal protection and physical. So that's what I think his interest was. He never met her, though. So what's interesting about this, he was charged with a criminal attempt to commit influencing witnesses, and she would have been a witness in the case again with Fannie Willis, although they'll never call her. I can pretty much guarantee that. But he
why would they not call her?
Well, I think that she would be picked apart on the witness stand. Just I think it would be too devastating for Fannie Willis's case. She's a potential witness.
I'm both saying for the prosecutor, on their side, would not want to call her. That's what you're saying.
Right. Even though they clear claiming that she would have been a witness for them, I would argue, first of all, there's no way they'll ever call her. I'll be willing to bet right now that they never call her. So the charge against Reverend Lee is false for that reason, but it's false for even a bigger reason, that is, he never met her. So if the charge is criminal attempt to commit influencing witnesses, he never met the witness. So he's never had any contact with her personally that I'm aware of. And there was never put any, nothing was in the indictment. They also charged him with conspiracy to commit false statements or writings. But to my knowledge, from what the indictment says, there's nothing that he ever wrote. So these are all conspiracies to attempt to do this and that. So it's basically thought police. So what this her indictment does, it attacks free speech. So under First Amendment rights, you particularly if we're talking about political speech is very protected under the Constitution. So that's some other reasons why these charges don't make sense. And some of the things that they allege that Reverend Lee did was he received a telephone call. Well, okay, that's your right. I mean, how do you control who's going to call you? He sent a text message. He placed a phone call. And again, all of these things are First Amendment protected speech. And yet she has tried to literally criminalize free speech. And she's, and in doing all this, she's violated her oath of office, we believe, and has committed what I think is the greatest case of prosecutorial misconduct in American history.
What baffles my mind in a case like this, unless it's just done strictly to chill, put a chill on, or muzzle, or intimidate, or bully, why would she spend time with a pastor, a reverend who's a chaplain to emergency situations, if he never even met the person? He was trying to get physical protection or maybe legal protection, help get attorney, or he took text or phone calls. Those sound like a nothing burger. Her target is Donald Trump. So why would she make it even more complicated for herself and mess with, I know Pastor Lee's ministry is significant in the eyes of God, but in the scope of this particular case, it's nothing. Why would she waste her time going after this guy? That doesn't compute to me. Can you help me understand what's on the inside of her mind? Why would she go after him when he, that's the least of her concerns? She wants Donald Trump.
Well, and I think she wants everyone around him.
But he doesn't even, Reverend Lee doesn't even know Donald Trump, never met him once.
Exactly, and not a lot of these people don't know Donald Trump. So she has argued that they are in a conspiracy, and most of the people don't even know each other. The vast majority of them. That's what's kind of insane about the whole thing. I think Georgia RICO law requires you to be along, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have my notes in front of me, but you have to be involved in an organization of some kind. None of these people are all involved in any single organization like a mafia. They don't even know each other. And yet, but what she, I believe what she wanted to do was to try to get anybody involved in this in any way for her own personal political gain. That's what this is all about, being a Democrat and a district attorney, an adversary of Donald Trump. If she can take down everyone around him, and then she is going to be perceived as some kind of hero, at least in her own mind. And that's what I believe that this is all about. At least that's what the evidence seems to point to me.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I the logic makes no sense. When I interviewed him, I just assumed he must have some connection to Trump. And then he just on his own said, I've never met him. I don't know him. I mean, obviously he knows who he is. Everybody does, but he had no connection whatsoever with Donald Trump. And so just, it really is quite an amazing case that she just shotgunned this many people without rifling. The one that she wants to take out is the former president. And so I don't understand why she's complicated her case with all this, unless it is to put a silencing mode and intimidation, put a chill factor, make it difficult for people. That's the only thing I can imagine. Why would she pick on Reverend Lee at all when he's just not even connected in any significant way to Donald Trump or this case?
Yeah. I'll give you another example. There's a guy named Michael Roman, who a lot of this evidence has come out. And he was not even investigated by the grand jury. And yet she and Nathan Wade decided to add him to the list. For another bizarre charge, very similar to Reverend Lee's. And fortunately that backfired on her because, you know, he could have taken a $5,000 fine and walked away with this whole thing with a misdemeanor. He chose to stay in. And a huge bulk of the information that I'm sharing with you today and the audience came because he did not take that easy out. He decided to fight instead of walking away. And as a result, a lot of his work and his attorneys, Ashley and John Merchant, have exposed all of this. They are responsible in large part for this disqualification effort. So Michael Roman will be another hero out of this for refusing to do what Jenna Ellis did and take a plea bargain for something, a crime that she never committed.
Yeah, and a similar kind of situation with the pastor, with Chaplain Lee. I don't believe he said this on the air, but I think some acquaintance of his or somebody told me that he had an easy out too. He could have pled guilty and been over, and he absolutely, in good conscience, could not, because he knew he was not guilty of anything, so could not go with that, even if that means he goes to prison. I think somebody told me he's around 70 years of age or more. So this is quite a situation to be in when you're in your 70s and you're facing prison or an easy out. And he said his conscience would not permit him to do that. Well, that's what was reported to me. So quite an era in which we live. You and I never thought, darling, we'd ever see America functioning like this.
Exactly, Jim, and that's why we're fighting so hard down here, Tamara and I, because if you'd asked me even 3 years ago, if this is the America that we would have, I would not have believed it unless I'd seen it with my own eyes. But to your point, Reverend Lee will also be another hero for refusing to cave in to this corrupt over indictment, over criminalization of charges that Fannie Willis has come up with.
A false charge. This is a false
Yeah,
charge.
they're false
But
charges.
what we long for is truth and honesty and integrity. That's what we long for. We're driven by biblical values. Alan, I'm going to ask you to bring up, if you can later, we'll talk about this later, but bring up Pastor Lee or Chaplain Lee's picture. Put on, so remind the people from the interview that we did with him recently, a few weeks ago, as I recall. Garland, thank you so much. I'm going to close this off here, but I thank you so much for, you always have such a grasp with specificity of these issues. They're complicated, they're difficult. And once again, folks, it's really important for you to know these situations. If you broad brush it, you watch it on the news and broad brush it and make it draw an assumption in 30 seconds, you can miss the critical issues and it will come back to get us all. It'll come back to take away the republic that we have. The US Constitution being violated and state constitutions being violated in so many ways are extremely serious issues for our nation right now. Garland, I'm going to pray for you and then we're going to go around to a spirit of prayer. Father, bless my friend Garland and Tamara. Be with them. We just pray that help us sort through, and what we long for is just truth. It's just truth. We long for truth. We want to know that which is right before your eyes. And so keep revealing yourself and all truth so we can walk in that and share the truth, we pray. And we pray for Chaplain Lee. We pray for these others that have been indicted. Pray for every one of them. Lift them up, Lord. And when we ask an avalanche of integrity to break in upon our judicial system and the court system, specifically there in Fulton County, may all that is not a part of you, that is wicked and wrong, be revealed. And may true biblical justice and truth be honored in this situation, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Don't forget to hit subscribe to keep up to date with our latest episodes. Leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.